puts a handle on that scarlet thread that goes through the book that, you know, kind of gets you to where, hey, man, there's more to this than what's meeting the eye here. And so, and the kid of the goats in verse 31 is going to be something that we're going to see a little bit more of. It's going to come out at pronounced. The kid of the goats, according to Leviticus, was the required offering for sin. That was the sin offering. Okay. We're all good now. All right. Start from the beginning. Okay. All right. Let's pray. No. So, and the kid of the goats, and it seems like the sin offering is being used to cover things up, you know, and it is a covering for sin, yes. But, you know, by the same token, it seems to be covering up. People are using it to cover up their sins, as we're going to see a little later in our study as we look at Judah. And so the last thing we see is Jacob is upset. He's refusing to be comforted. His beloved son, as far as he knows, is dead, and he'll never see him again. And so he says he's going to mourn him to the grave. And so then the Midianites, in verse 36, sold him to Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. And we're going to pick that up in who Potiphar is and all of that stuff in verse 39. But in chapter 38, which follows 37, it's like this thing is stuck right here in the middle of this. You know, we're right in the middle of the scenario of Joseph here. And all of a sudden, this gets stuck in the way there. And so, why it's in there, why it happens to be in this particular place, you know, I guess is anybody's guess, but this is where the Lord chose to put it. So I'm sure that there must be some reason for it to be here. It has some kind of correlation, I'm sure, with the future events. So let's pick it up. Let's pick up the narrative in chapter 38. And it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And he took her and went in unto her. And she conceived and bare a son, and he called his name Er. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she called his name Onan. And she yet again conceived and bare a son, and called his name Shelah. And he was at Chezeb when she bare him. And Judah took a wife for Er, his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And Er, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. And Judah said unto Onan, Go in to thy brother's wife, and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother. And Onan knew that the seed should not be his, and it came to pass, when he went in unto his brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, therefore he slew him also. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, Remain a widow at thy father's house, till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, Lest peradventure he die also, as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. And so we have this rather unsavory little goings-on here. And so let's just take it from the first verse here. So Judah is going down to a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. Now, Hira means wealth. And so he's got this place. Now, they were all dwelling at Hebron, and Adullam was probably about, you know, 5 to 10 miles down the path a bit. And then they go to a place called Timnah, which is probably another 10 miles after that. This is a place where Judah had his sheep, and I guess every family had their portion of their sheep. And he kept them separate, because it says that he went down from his brethren. So he separated himself from his brethren, and he went down into this place. And one of the things that I noticed about this is that the wife, the lady that he hooks up with has no name. The name of her father is mentioned, but she is not. And so what I'm thinking here is what it looks like to me, because of the story between Esau and Jacob. Esau took a wife of the Canaanites, and Isaac wasn't real pleased with that. And so what I'm seeing here is he's got this girl down in Adullam on the sly. Nobody knows about it because she has no name. Yes. No, that's the name of her father. as we'll see in verse 12. And in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. So, yeah, I thought that too. The way that you read it, you could construct it as Shua being the daughter, but until I got there, then, erase, you know. There's a nice backspace. It's a great thing on the computer. You just all of those wonderful notes that I had on there, you know, it was just gone. See ya. So one of the things in the Bible study is you should read all of it first and then go back and dissect it. No. I mean, but I do. I take it. Exactly, yeah. Well, I was trying to sit there. I went through all of the names. What does Ur mean? What is, you know, all of these things? And then come to realize, oh, wow, you know, that's not right either. And that's not her name. So, it's kind of like, you know, as if we go through these things, and Judah saw there the daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. Now, here he is. He's down there with the sheep. And now he's hooking up with this girl. And he has a couple of kids by her. I don't think that any of the rest of the family knew about it. I think he was keeping her, you know, okay, just be cool about it. Don't say anything and we won't rock the boat here. And if we go through the names, that she conceived and bare a son and called his name Ur. The firstborn is Ur, which means awake or watchful. And she conceived again and bare a son and called his name Onan, which means strong or mighty one. And she conceived yet and bare a son and called his name Shelah. Now, Shelah means a petition, which is kind of out of sorts with what is going on here. But what is interesting is that, and he was at Chezeb when she bare him. So he wasn't even around when she bare him. So the underlying flavor of this is that it's not really his child. Okay, this is an illegitimate child. Because Chezeb means false or falsified. Okay, so that's where he was, and as I was looking at these things up, there's no city named Chezeb anywhere in that area. So it's just kind of like, what's going on here? And so as I started to dig into this name, and I realized, hey, this child was probably illegitimate. So he's got a wife on the sly, two kids that nobody knows about, and then another kid that's, you know, that questionable parentage, whether it's his or not. And I believe that that's going to factor in how we interpret this this area of scripture here. And so, anybody have any thoughts on that? No? Yeah, we're good. And Judah took a wife for Er, his firstborn, whose name is Tamar. Now, as I started to look at this, I'm thinking, when was this going on? I mean, Joseph was only gone for 12 years. Okay? And so, here we've got Judah going down. He found a wife, got a couple, three kids, and now they're old enough to get married. How long, when did this happen? And so we really don't know when this really happened. You know, I mean, I know that they lived a long time, and so it seemed that they would forestall getting married until later on in their years. So when all this is happening, I don't know. But it's here, for a reason, and I've yet to discover what that reason is, why it's plucked in the middle of the story of Joseph. And maybe we can come up with some reasons. I'm not sure. But maybe, you know, with some prayer and really looking into it, the Lord will show us why it's here and why it happens to be in this particular place. And so Judah took a wife for Er's firstborn, whose name was Tamar, which means palm or palm tree. And I don't know what that has to do with anything, but I just thought I'd throw that out there so you can know I did my homework. And Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. We don't know what it is that Er was, you know, what his wickedness was. Okay, it just doesn't say. So, you know, rather than, you know, sit there and try to venture an opinion about that, it could be anything. But before we do that, you know, we need to examine ourselves and what wickedness really is in us, rather than sitting there trying to figure out why the Lord slew him and why doesn't he slay us. You know, because of the wickedness that is in it. And it's, you know, it's grace and it's the Lord's providence and it's the Lord's Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the wealth of his sheep and the people that he was hanging around with. Exactly right. Because of the name Shua means wealth, you know. Absolutely, right. That could very well be too. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I would have to figure, that would be when. But, you know, how does this figure into the story? I believe the reason why the story of Judah is coming out, because we know that from Judah comes the kingly line. And he was the one that was up for that. And so, and as we get into chapter 46, we're going to see that through this unsavory dealings here comes the line of Jesus Christ. Here we have the first Gentile, Tamar, introduced. Where did she come from? Now we have a background where she did come from. We don't know her parentage. We just know that she was from this area here of the people around. Okay, so he was wicked, and the Lord slew him for whatever reason. I have my thoughts on why, but I'll share those later. But okay. Yeah, I was waiting for that. Yeah, very sad, yeah. Okay. We really should have screeners before. Yeah, 7 second delay. No, no, and yeah, I mean, I was trying to work that in myself, but I'm glad you brought it up rather than me. got to play the straight man here. So, and so now here, Judah says to Onan, "Go into thy brother's wife and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother." Now, we know that in Deuteronomy 25, in fact, let's turn there just to, so that we can get a good idea of what it is that we're talking here. It was codified later, but what fascinates me is that the patriarchs knew this stuff before it went into law. How did they know it? You know, that's what, you know, kind of, you know, just kind of cooks my brain once in a while. You just kind of like, well, how is it that these guys knew? Well, obviously, the Lord told them. And we wonder sometimes if, because of what happens to us as Gentiles, we become born again and the Lord writes His law in our hearts. And He tells us these things. Now, we know through Cain and through Adam and through all of these that there was a special relationship that God had with men, that He would speak to them directly. And I'm wondering if He didn't say, okay, this is what I want you guys to do when these things happen. This is what's going on. Because Judah just had, he just knew what it was that he was supposed to do.
Yeah, I kind of have to believe that because, of course, God said that He created man for fellowship.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was maybe ingrained in their DNA or whatever. Exactly. From father to son. Absolutely. The laws of what was required, you know, that was part of raising children, was teaching them the right way to go. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The sacrifices, why they were, that kind of a thing. And so in chapter 25, Deuteronomy 25, and this will be good for you ladies because you'll probably be going through this in the book as you're studying the book of Ruth. I'm sorry. Chapter 25, verse 5 says, "If brethren dwell together, and one of them die, and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her, and take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate of to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto the man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. Now, you know, what's going on here? I mean, that's just, the firstborn, I guess that's why they really took a great interest in, who the firstborn was going to marry. Because, you don't want to, be marrying some harpy or something like that you don't want to be having anything to do with, because what if your brother dies? Well, then it falls to you. And then what happens, Now, if you go through the book of Ruth, we find that Boaz is a near kinsman, and he wants to fulfill the kinsman's duty. And that is, he wants to marry Ruth, and he wants to buy back the land and restore it back to Naomi. Well, you have a question? Oh, okay, you were raising your foot. I didn't know if that was some new thing or you learned that in school. I don't know. But we find out that there is a nearer kinsman who can't fulfill it, and it's not clear why. Whether he may be engaged to be married, who knows why. But it was up to the nearer kinsman to marry the dead brother's wife to raise up seed for him, because the firstborn would be his. Now, apparently, Onan didn't care much for Ur. So he says, I'm not raising up seed for my idiot brother. It's just not in me to do. So he didn't fulfill his duty, and the Lord slew him for it. He displeased the Lord by this, and he slew him. So I wouldn't read too much into the in verse 9 where it says he spilled his seed on the ground. That's been used for things that, it really wasn't intended for. This was him not wanting to fulfill the duty. He didn't want to marry this girl. He wanted to live his own life. Now, remember, these guys were children of Canaanites. All right? They weren't raised by Judah. They were just sired by Judah. They were raised by the unnamed woman in the Canaanite fashion. Okay? I think this is why maybe that they were into some heinous things and the Lord slew them to get them out of the kingly line. Remember, the kingly line was going to go through Judah. We don't know that yet, but we know that it was going to, because of the things that Reuben did, because of what Simeon and Levi did. It fell to Judah. Judah was number 4 on the hit parade, okay, of the sons of Leah. So he was, and we're going to see in chapter 49, Jacob pronounces it, that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh come, okay? Or a ruler, a lawgiver from between his knees, until Shiloh come. And so that means that the Messiah was going to come from the line of Judah.
So this practice has been ongoing, and I don't remember it being earlier.
No, this is the first time it's really mentioned here, but it was something that was known and practiced, perhaps, but this is the only... Yeah, yeah. Like I said, we know that the Lord, and the thing which he did displeased the Lord, and therefore he slew him for it. So we don't know what Ur did, but we know that Onan, we get a glimpse into what he was doing. Maybe, like I say, I don't want to speculate, because some of the things that they practiced is kind of like the things that people practice today, and I'm not even going to get into that. So, but we know that it was something that was heinous in the eyes of God. And so both of those guys were slain, and I think it was to get them out of the way. Now, when I say that, I'm saying that with 2020 hindsight. I'm looking at it in reverse. I'm saying, okay, we got these two guys. We got three guys, actually. Two that we know of are sired by Judah, but to be in the kingly line, they had to get out of it. They had to, they had to be gotten rid of somehow, some way. So the Lord slew them. And then Shelah was supposed to be given to the wife for the next one to come up. But Judah says, no. Okay, I'm not going to do that, lest he die also. So maybe he was thinking that maybe there was something wrong with Tamar. Maybe, who knows. But who knows what goes into mind. But he was probably young yet and said, okay, well, we'll just hold off from doing that. And then Judah said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah, that my son be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So he's probably thinking, okay, I'm getting rid of them. These are Gentiles now. These are people of the land. The rest of the family doesn't know anything about this, I believe. Just because of where he was going, he separated himself from his brethren. Okay, he's probably making trips down here and there, and so these kids are being raised by the Gentiles. Yes. I presume that's correct. Right, right. I presume that they're in that the place where they were. Where were they? Adullam. In that area, Adullam or in Timnath. Those kinds of, because he's going to go to Timnath to shear his sheep, and Tamar's going to be there and meets him there, as we're going to see in a little bit there in verse 13, where he talks about. In verse 12, he says, in the process of time, the daughters of Shua, Judah's wife, died. The daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And he was comforted. Okay, now, you can read that any way you like. And Judah was comforted and went up unto his sheep shears into Timnath, and he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear his sheep. And she put her widow's garments off of her, and covered her with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place, which is by the way to Timnath. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him for wife. So here she's wanting to get in on the inheritance here. There's you know, the kid's grown now, and she hasn't been given to wife. What's going on here? Am I just going to be cast aside or what? She really has no claim to the land, claim to Shelah, because the two boys were unknown to the rest of the family, and so they've been kind of off to the side, kind of like a kept woman, if you will. And now here, you know, she thinks she's going to get, cut out of the inheritance or whatever. And so so she puts off her widow's garments, and then she wraps herself in a veil, and she sits in an open place. But and when Judah saw her, he thought her to be a harlot because she had covered her face. Now, she never said that she was a harlot. She never advertised herself, but he just thought her to be a harlot. Okay? And so he starts to treat her like one. And he turned unto her, and by the way, and said, go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what wilt thou give me, that thou mayest come in unto me? And he said, I will send thee a kid from the flock. And she said, wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? Notice the kid here again. The kid is coming in for the covering of sin once again. And he said, what pledge shall I give thee? And she said, thy signet and thy bracelets and thy staff that is in thy hand. And he gave it her and came in unto her, and she conceived by him. Now these things that she knew exactly what to ask for. The signet was the signet ring. This was these were things that you signed your name to. These were the only things that you had. They were one-of-a-kind things. And when you were going to make a deal in the tablets and clay tablets, you would put your ring on there to specify, hey, this was me and there is no other. And so she took that, the namesake, if you will. Now, he couldn't do any business until he got that ring back. It does seem odd. It seems the whole thing is odd. That's the nature of the story. Yeah, and Social Security card. Yeah. She must have been a looker, you know. I mean, but she was covered. Oh, sorry. She had a veil. She had a veil. Well, let's not get in too much into detail here. You know, I mean, remember they were in an open place, so you know, it doesn't say there was a Motel 6 around the corner. You know, it just says we're presupposing a lot of things. You know, because of our minds, we're putting in a lot of detail that there really isn't there. Okay, so we need to, you know, just kind of back off and look at it clinically. You know, as okay, just the facts, ma'am, as Sergeant Friday would tell us, just the facts. Just give me the facts. And so, you know, she's in for the cash. Okay, hey, I want my inheritance. I can't live in my father's house forever. You said that you were going to give it to me. You aren't doing it. I've got no leg to stand on. Now I'm getting the goods. Okay, so she got the signet, which is the seal, if you will. And then the bracelet. Now, this bracelet is an interesting thing. In Numbers 15:38, it's translated as the blue ribbon that goes along the border of the garment. Now, isn't that interesting? Okay? And remember the woman that came and touched the border of Jesus' garment. That's what she was touching, is that blue ribbon. And it was required in every Jew to have that blue ribbon in your robe as a border on there. From the tassels, and then there was that blue band, which was up, and then your garment proper. And so it was just interesting. And there's some other places, but I thought that was the most interesting one that I could look at. But that was the blue ribbon that went through there. And then the staff that's in my hand. Now, the staff is, you know, basically the walking stick, but it carried much more significance than that, in that it had your genealogy basically carved into the staff, and it was handed down from son to son to son, okay? From father to son, father to son, father to son, on down the line. And as you went down, you carved your name in it. And so you had your genealogy to prove that, hey, this is mine, but this is where I come from, because I have this staff, and the head of the household always carried the staff. So it was much more than just a walking stick or anything like that. It was kind of like, you know, yeah, you're right. It was the driver's license, social security card, you know, passport, the whole nine yards, you know, the keys of the chariot, you know, whatever it was. She got the whole nine yards, but it was just a hold until she got a kid of the goats, right? Ah, what the hey. You're right. She was probably pretty desperate to go through that. Yeah, you know, it's just one of those human nature things. You got it, maybe, yeah, it's a guy thing. Maybe, I don't know. So yeah, you really, I like I say, I can speculate. Being a guy, I can speculate all I want. That doesn't make it so. But it was part of God's providence that this happened. And the thing that we come to grips with stories like this is, you know, God knew in advance that this was going to happen. You know, but was this God's will? Was this God's perfect plan for this to happen this way? You know, I wonder if he would have just gone and got Tamar and did it legitimately, we would have no problems. Nobody would have died. Everything would have been, you know, would have been kosher, if you will. But he, you know, I see as you start to hide your sin away, it's gonna be uncovered. It's gonna find you out. Your sin will find you out. And so as you try, the more you try to hide it, the more it's gonna start leaking out through the sides. It's kind of like water in a bucket. You know, you're at water in a bucket, and you try to place a lid on that, and you push it down to try to seal it, and there's just too much water in there, it's not going to seal. The excess is going to fall out. You just cannot compress water. Sin is the same way. Sin, you just cannot hide it. You can't put it in a bag and bury it somewhere. It's going to come out because it's a part of you. You have done this thing, and the only way to get rid of it is to confess it and let God take it away. Let God forgive it and make it go away. And she conceived by him. Now, it wasn't her intent, maybe. She never said that she was the harlot. She just sat in an open place, and he presumed. But yeah, I mean, but I would think to uncover your face would be, because it was the norm to have your faces covered. So, I mean, maybe it was what she was wearing. Who knows? Maybe she was wearing something provocative for that culture or whatever. She might. Right. But she'd taken off her widow's clothes and put on covered her with a veil, you know, or whatever. Maybe that's all she was wearing was a veil. Who knows? Yeah.
Right.
Breaking a covenant. Yeah. Right. Well, too much wine, to dark, you know. There's all kinds of different scenarios of that, yeah. Right.
That's why it's not through the harlot. Any attention to clothes, there's much to be seen.
That's true.
That's kind of
it. Yeah.
I'm not sure what I think of it. The thing is, these three things are good. I mean, he says the sickness is for the community. The blue cord is for the authority of him.
Yeah. Yes, that is a very good point. Yeah. Oh, yeah. For the CD, he said that sounds more like divorce. Yeah, he took everything. Yeah. Yeah. This is real life, folks. I mean, it's neat that it's in here. By the same token, it's just like, you know, this is where we are. This is what we are. This is the kind of people we are. And yet the Lord still joins himself to us. That's the amazing thing about it. He knows we're like this. Now, we might go a day. All right, let me get a little less, maybe an hour where we think that we may not have sinned. Or maybe we just might be, you know, in that time of prayer and praise and worship. And, you know, maybe we hadn't sinned or at all. But, if you know. The Lord knows what we are. You know, we are sinners. We are conceived in sin. And so, I mean, it for him to even associate with us, it's kind of like, I don't know, I mean, when you're going into an operating theater or something, you got to get dressed. You got to get all of these garments on. You got to protect yourself from whatever it is that's in there. And by the same token, you can't affect the person that you're working on, you know, as a doctor. I mean, you got to do these things. But, you know, so God, what he did is he took the blood of his son and covered us with it so that he could have contact with us. And I find that, man, it's great. It's always about the blood. That little scarlet thread, we're going to see a little bit later about that scarlet thread and how it works and how, just, man, it allows God to have fellowship with us without violating his righteousness. And so that just blows me away. So, okay. So in verse 19, he says, "And she arose and went away and laid by her veil from her and put on the garments of her widowhood." And, you know, it kind of, by that, what you were saying, that you're right, it doesn't say anything about garments, but it reminds me of like in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and stuff when people were in mourning, they used to wear, the guys used to wear the black band, you know, you saw, you know. It's a Wonderful Life where, you know, he's got the band on there. But I remember seeing people with that band on, and I think even the Jewish people do that today. If they're in mourning about somebody, they wear a black band for, I think, 30 days or something like that to mourn their dead, or to let you know that they're mourning and not to to bother them or whatever. Oh, that's a good point, indeed. Right, yeah. It never says that he took a wife, that he was just hanging out with this gal. And, yeah, good point, yeah. Absolutely, all right. Good stuff. Okay, so in 19, she rose, she went away, and laid her veil from her and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he found her not. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside?" And they said, "There is no harlot in this place." And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." And also the men of the place said that there is no harlot in that place. And Judah said, "Let her take it to her, lest we be ashamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her." So he's just going to say, okay, well, what else can we do? And we'll just move on. And it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, "Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot, And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. This is great. There's these places in scriptures that you wish that you could just... Cecil B. DeMille would have had a field day with this one. You know, just kind of like the drama with this. And when she brought her forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child. And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet, the bracelet, and staff. And Judah acknowledged them and said, she hath been more righteous than I, because I gave her not Shelah, my son, and he knew her again no more. So, as I read this little bit here, what came to my mind was a little incident that Jesus dealt with. There was this time where Jesus was at the temple in John 8, and these Pharisees came dragging this girl, kicking and screaming, and threw her before him and said, this woman was caught in the very act of adultery. Okay, in the very act. Now, the law says to stone her. What do you say? You know, and I, for some reason, that just came into my mind as I was looking at this, and I'm thinking, what did Jesus do then? He got down and he started writing in the dirt. Okay? And then he got up and he says, you know, those of you who are out sin, cast the first stone. Now, Judah was all set, man. Let's burn this girl. Get it done with. Man, we got all of our bases covered. We're golden. Okay? Nobody will ever know that I had anything to do with anybody. It's all been taken care of. And so, but, you know, and from the eldest to the youngest, they left. They left him. And then she was standing alone with the Lord, and he got up and he says, where are these thine accusers? And there's none to accuse. And so you kind of wonder, well, what was it that the Lord was writing in the dust? Was it the times that that they had been with this woman? Or was it did he write in there, where's the guy? Okay, because if she was caught in the act, the whole thing was to bring both of them, and they were both to be stoned. And to put out sin in Israel. Where's the guy? You know, which one of you guys were a part of this? You know, that kind of a thing. And so so I kind of see that being played out here, that hey, Judah was going to do that because, hey, well, he was a patriarch. He was a man of society, and says, okay, we can't have sin in the camp. We need to get rid of the sin in the camp. And then when it was discovered that he was the one that was perpetrating, okay, you're ready to kill this girl, and you should be stoned as well. And so... that's why that they didn't come together again, because they had to consider each other dead. Okay, there were no more children going to come from that. And so that's why he said he knew her again no more. In verse 27 he says, and it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. Interesting, another set of twins. Every time we turn around, there's a set of twins being born, and they are significant. It's interesting. And it came to pass that when she travailed, that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. And it came to pass, as he drew back his hand, that behold, his brother came out, and she said, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee, therefore his name is called Pharez, which means breach, or split in half, or broken. And afterwards came out his brother, and that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was Zerah. Now, Zerah means rising, if you will. But Zerah basically was the firstborn. He's on his way out, and they put the scarlet thread, and he pulls back his hand, and his brother came out. This kind of same kind of a scenario that Jacob and Esau. You know, Esau was the firstborn, but God chose Jacob. Okay, so the elder was favored over the younger, and it's the same thing here. The elder started to come out, and he got tagged, came back in, and then Pharez came out. Now, let's see. In Deuteronomy 23:2, it says, a bastard shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to his tenth generation. Shall not he enter into the congregation of the Lord. And if we look at the genealogies from Judah to David, we see that from Pharez all the way to David is exactly 10 generations. Now, this particular story seems to be like right in the middle of Joseph. And if Joseph is a type of Christ, and we're kind of seeing him as that, then Judah, what is it that this is representing here? You know, it could be that this whole story here is representative of what's going to happen in the tribulation time. We see that Joseph, in his, if you want to see the first part of the story of Joseph as Jesus' first coming, and the second part of the story is Jesus' second coming, we see that Phares and Zerah would represent maybe two different kinds of folks. Both Israelites, if you will, but one that's sanctified by the scarlet thread, and the other one that's secular. Kind of like what we were talking about on Sunday, when we were looking at Israel becoming a nation, the fig tree budding forth and Israel becoming a nation. A lot of people think that that's what that was. But then there was the vineyard and the fig tree used together to identify what Israel was. And if you don't have the Levitical system, you really didn't have a nation of Israel, because Israel was always defined by its relationship to God. And they always had that relationship because of the Levitical system. You had to have the Levitical system to take sin away so that you could have fellowship with God. And the land was God's gift to, it was the inheritance that you got for worshiping God. It was a circular thing. You were in the land because you worshiped God. When you stopped worshiping God, what happened? God took them out of the land. Remember, took them to Babylon. Okay? And then after the Levitical system ended, when they tore the temple down, they were dispersed. They were dispersed through every nation. And now they're being brought back. The vineyard is once again being populated. But the fig tree, not yet. They're preparing it because they're preparing to get the Levitical system back in. They have a hunger for it. If you want to go up on the Temple Institute website and find out all of the things that they're doing to prepare for all of those things, the spiritual move is now coming back. In Ezekiel, in the Valley of the Dry Bones, he brings the bones out and he puts sinew on them and flesh and skin, and they're standing upright, but there's no breath in them. There's no life. And then he says, "Son of man, prophesy on these cattle." And he prophesied on them, and the breath of God, the Ruach of God, came and gave them life. So there was a two-stage setup going on. There was the state itself, secular Israel coming to pass, the flesh, and then the spirit, which is their relationship to God or their hunger for God, coming back. The Lord opening that back up again. And so during the time of the tribulation, that's what's going to happen. They're going to set up this whole thing, this Levitical system once again. After the church has been taken, they're going to set up this Levitical system so that they'll have their relationship with God. They need to do something about their sin. They can't do anything until that temple is rebuilt, and then they can do sacrifices once again. And boy, is PETA going to be upset. I mean, they are going to have a field day with this one. Okay, because they're going to need to do that. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to do anything about their sin. And so as the Lord is moving on the people of Israel, the push is becoming more and more. We need to have our temple again. And we should rejoice with that, because that's a sign that the Lord is coming back soon, you know, and we won't be here to see that. And so the sooner that they get that going, or the sooner that that starts to happen, the sooner we can get out of here. We don't need to pack any bags, but we're going to be able to just move on out to greener pastures, if you will. Yes. Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And David, well, I mean, we can look at the judges, you know, Timnath. You know, what happened? What famous person was at Timnath? Samson. Samson went down to Timnath and spied a girl. Remember? Joshua was buried on the border of Timnath. Okay, so Timnath has a great deal to do with the things that are going on. Now, Timnath, in if you look at a map of the ten tribes, was basically in Judah proper. Now, as Judah, as Israel and as Israel was in the land and they were under the judges, they cried out for a king. Okay, so Samuel cried, you know, God, you know, they want a king, and so they gave him Saul, okay, who was a Benjamite, okay, which is kind of interesting, the other brother of Joseph, okay. But God had he knew who he wanted to give them as a king. It was David all along. But because... Exactly right, yeah. Exactly right, yeah. But so you can see that, you know, okay, we'll give you Saul. Saul isn't going to be the one that I wanted you to have. But if you want one here, you can take this until the one that comes along that I wanted. You see, when they were asking for Saul, David was way too small to even take that position. He wasn't ready yet. But if you guys just hold still, God will come through with his perfect plan instead of you guys crying out for what it is that you want. So, but that's the way the flesh is, you know. And so as Israel started to come in and the king started to take over, there was Israel, and then the latter bottom portion started to become Judah. And it was the southern kingdom was known as the kingdom of Judah. It was a synonymous. And then when the Assyrians came, all of Israel became known as Judah. And then, as we see in Jesus' times, what was that area called? Judea. Same kind of a thing. It was always there. Judah was always in the mind of God right on through. But he, you know, being a person, the Lord knew what choices he was going to make, just like he knows our choices, what we're going to make, our mistakes. But all things work together for good. And I'm not condoning anything that happened down here. It was just that, hey, human nature is just that. It's human nature. Now, this is light, if you will, compared to what the other brothers had done. Okay? I mean, as far as, if you want to put it in degrees, you know, as far as heinous is. But, you know, Reuben, he went in and slept with his father's concubine. You know, and so, and then the Simeon and Levi wiped out the whole town of Shechem, if you will. So, you know, there were some things. But it fell to Judah to carry on the line. And as we look at that line, we're going, you know, you see that, hey, there was Shelah. Why didn't it come from Shelah? And why didn't it come from Zerah? It came from Perez. Perez was the one that was selected to be in the line of Jesus Christ. And here, so Tamar here, as we're going to wrap this up, Tamar is the first Gentile woman to be mentioned in the lineage of Jesus Christ. Now, there were three others. Anybody want to name them? Not you. There was who? Ruth. Anybody else? No fair looking at Matthew. Rahab the harlot, also a Gentile. And Bathsheba, also a Gentile. Okay? Why is she a Gentile? Because she was the wife of Uriah the Hittite, who was a Gentile. Okay, but yet, Uriah the Hittite was one of the 31 mighty men of David. So he was an honorable sort. So, yeah, I think we'll close that for today. But this being stuck right here in the middle of the story of Joseph, and then if you look at chapter 39, it says it's just like it was, you know, it's the same verse from... the end of chapter 37. So it just continues on with the story. But this parenthetical thing is in here because Judah is in the line of Jesus Christ and needed to be in here. He's the only one that has this kind of a genealogy, if you will, this kind of a parenthetical study. Everybody else is just a secondary thing because it's not important to the story. The story is about Jesus Christ and where he came from. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. But it, no. But yeah, it's just, and it's just like us, you know. I mean, what effect are we having with the decisions that we're making, the things that we're into now? How is that going to affect future generations? You stop and think about that. I mean, we're so caught up in ourselves that, hey, we're just living for today, but we know that there are going to be generations following. What example are we setting, or what are we telling the future generations about the coming of the Lord? You know, we're looking into the things of the world, of the Word. This is what we're about. This is what you should be doing as well. You know, if Judah would have been, oh yeah, I've been studying the Scriptures, or, you know, been having sacrifices to God, the story may be a little different, but the same results would have came out. He would have been directed by God to go to Timnath to get Tamar as a wife, and just like, you know, all of the prophets here, like Hosea went to take a wife of whoredom. That was directed by the Lord to do that, and you know that's unheard of. You know, he's just kind of like, what? I got to do what? You know, you want me to do what? Yeah, did I hear you right? You know, I mean, I would have to ask two or three times. You know, I'm going to lay the fleece out there. If you burn up just a middle portion of that, you know, I mean, because that's not, it was forbidden to do that. And yet the Lord told him to do that because he wanted his life to be a testimony to the nation of Israel. Just like us. We are a testimony. Our lives are a testimony to the people around us. What message are we sending? You know, we're going to look at Joseph, and in verse 3 it says, "And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hands." Well, how did the master know that the Lord was with Joseph? This guy was an Egyptian. He didn't know the Lord. He didn't know anything about the Lord. Joseph told him about the Lord. And what did he do? He backed it up with his actions. And that's what authenticated his word. Just like you guys. You're at work. You tell people about the Lord, and what's it backed up with? The way you live your life. You live your life to impeccable standards, standards that are set to the Lord. Yeah, are we going to blow it? Sure, absolutely. But they want to know, the world wants to know, what do you do when you blow it? How do we recover from such things? You know, we have marvelous opportunities every day to show people, you know, how I recover from falling down. How do I get back up? 1 John 1:9. I confess my sin. He is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And that is going to be a testimony to those who are called. To those who are not called, it's going to be, yeah, you're scorned. You're just using that as a cloak. It's a crutch. It's a cloak or whatever. It doesn't matter what they say, but you know it to be true. And because the Scriptures tell you that it's true. And you believe it because you have the faith and they do not. Zerah and Perez. We're going to see that more and more as we start to go in, how those two, you know, maybe were interact. What I wanted to do, when I'll do that next week, is take the scarlet thread and trace it through history where it shows up again. We see it in Jericho. We see it throughout the fashioning of the breastplate of the high priests. So there's so many different places where this thing shows up. So it's kind of cool. So let's stand. Get some blood back into our legs.